Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So, sage against the machine, we want to honor many wind wizards incarnate and spirit. We're honoring Bob Goff, lawyer for the Lakota Sioux, secretary of Coup, Council on Neutrality Policy, Wind Power on the Res, founding board member of Arade. And so we welcome ally Chip Commons and the spirit of Bob Goff and his spirit brother Pat Spears and others that we join with their spirits in putting up our sails to direct the wind to benefit all beings. So Chip Commons is a renewable energy and clean technology expert and serves as chairman and CEO of the American Renewable Energy Institute, AREDAY.net, and is the founder of Arade. He's president and CEO of American Spirit Productions and managing director of We Energy. He focuses and connects climate solutions in a climate constellation of implementation, acceleration, and replication locally, nationally, and globally, and many other fantastic credits to his name. Welcome, Chip.
Thank you, Caroline. Glad to be here.
When Bob died, Bob Goff, our wonderful ally that we want to transmit, September 17th, 2017, the image for the sun that day was about honoring grief. And I lived with a coyote for 19 years, Stella Coyote, and she taught me that coyote grief is dedication to life. So here we are. I think Bob would be pleased, right, to put up our sails to catch the wind. And many things that we love, I'll hand it back to you. But Bob was so good at spiraling out of conflict into accessible conversation. When speaking to evangelicals, he said, you know, we don't want the fuels from hell, coal and oil, but the fuels from heaven, wind and sun. And then when people said climate change is a hoax, he would rejoinder and go, fine, but notice any weird weather lately? And people would say, oh boy, how do you, there we go. And so, yes. And so wherever you want to jump in, let me just give, allies, cooperators are standing by. So as we are here now, in the mytho language, Uranus and Jupiter are our booking agents. They say, you dedicate to what, we will do how and help you Gaia's out, and they are both at their stationing degree. Uranus is at the degree of a new continent, a rising up out of the ocean, opportunity after crisis. And we go, we'll take it. And Jupiter's stationing degree right now is a crystal gazer. So it says, if we envision the desirable, then Uranus, also associated with wind, also with Oya, who hurls her horsetail whip and summons the winds of change, Uranus says, we'll do the booking. So it's an opportune time to cahoot. So maybe you can bring forth your dedication and your journey with Bob.
Sure. Well, thank you, Caroline. And in the spirit of cahooting, I would like to honor the great man and the great memory that I have of Robert Goff, who, known as Bob, that is just one of the most incredible people that I ever personally encountered. The guy, he was a cultural anthropologist who married a Lakota woman, and the Lakota people said, well, Bob, you know, you could help us the most if you would go back to college and get a law degree, because we need some good lawyering around here up on the Rosebud. And so he did. And he spent much of his time before we became involved in his latest endeavor, his last endeavor with Pat Spears, which was called the Intertribal Council on Utility Policy. But he spent much of his time working on behalf of the tribe. When tribal members would get in trouble, he would go to the mats with them, always getting calls in the middle of the night from somebody that was thrown in the tank for one reason or another. Or something as significant as representing the spirit of Crazy Horse in a lawsuit against British Petroleum when they tried to name an offshore drilling platform, and he said, "No, you can't do that. That's not legal. That's Crazy Horse is the name, a trademark owned by the whole tribe the Teton Sioux, Lakota people. And so, you know, and so when they settled in their favor, you know, and they said, well, what about reparations? And Bob said, wait, I'll get back to you guys, the judge and VP. And he went and counseled with the elders. And then the payoff was decided to be, you know, 15 horses and, you know, and so many teachers. So Bob was an amazing, amazing man. And he was
No, sorry, I didn't mean to to step on your homage, but also it was the Crazy Horse malt liquor was folded into that suit as well, right?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And any other Crazy Horse, I mean, you know, people would knock off the name and use it as they wish all over the world, and so, you know, you really couldn't keep up with it all, you know. But those were the big ones. Just as an example, but Bob's real, you know, real heart, and I called him my pet name for Bob was Tate Chante, which means wind heart. And it was Bob's heart that got him in the end, in fact. You know, he had such a big heart. And, you know, everybody loved Bob because he brought a certain mirth, you know, and a mischievous, I think the Irish in him would get out every once in a while, even though he was from Lenape, indigenous heritage a bit there as well. You know, Bob Goff met Pat Spears and they became lifelong partners until Pat's demise, and then Pat went first. When they worked together in the Mini Wachoni, was a nonprofit organization concerned with the water flow in the river of the Missouri and the dam, the Wahi Dam, and the allocation of the water. And then in the doing, they became very, very interested in developing utility scale renewable energy, particularly wind, for the tribes. And so they founded the Intertribal Council on Utility Policy, which I think at one point was up to 15 or even maybe 20 tribes, not only all of the Lakota, but the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara, the three affiliated, the Crow, many others. Were part of this intertribal organization, and Bob and Pat tirelessly would crisscross these reservations, mostly in Bob's, you know, 1996 Honda Civic, which we knew and loved, to get to the tribal meetings, to get to the powwows, to get to the conferences that sometimes would include people like Senator Dorgan back in those days and from North Dakota, to advance the policies of the implementation of renewable utility-scale wind energy and get the tribes involved in the biggest game in the world, which, of course, is the production of energy and thus doing have deliver a good amount of economic and environmental justice to the people that severely need it the most, and in particularly the social justice that the tribes deserve. If any of your listeners have ever been up to North Dakota or South Dakota and been to reservations like the Pine Ridge, you realize that this is the fourth world in the first world, where we have the highest rates of unemployment and alcoholism and teen suicide in the country. And so, you know, these people are very proud people that consider the Black Hills, you know, to be the heart of all that is in their creation story and mythology. But, and who were never conquered, you know, by the U.S. government. You know, this is the people of Crazy Horse and Red Cloud and so forth. But we're subjugated ultimately, like everybody, all the rest. And so that's where, you know, I threw in with Bob and Pat and sort of became the third wheel, recording all of their efforts. You know, I was the filmmaker. And anyway, that's part of the story.
Right. No, as Pat Spears says, you know, the Great Plains are the Saudi Arabia of wind in this country, you know, the president of coup. And when Pat died, which was on July 2nd, 2012, the moon was overhead at the particular degree of resolving climate crisis, really seriously, no kidding. Its image is long-term vision for sustainable life. And that's his as he goes out. And we go, yes, yes, death, big mystery, I do not presume anything, but I like, you know, calling in Bob Goff and Pat Spears. They would be pleased with us. And as, you know, and I've watched all the movies, some of them twice without even knowing it, that you recommended, that is on the Arade.net website and scattered around too. And, you know, and so Pat ends, you know, Indian country is dedicated to wind powering America for all the right reasons, long-term benefits to future generations, grandmother Earth, and to create jobs for North American and our children's children depend on wise decisions. You know, and we're in a world where, you know, as someone noted, you know, a toddler goes to a July 4th parade and leaves an orphan. We go, what are we doing? What are we doing?
Right.
But a better, yes, sorry.
Oh, I was just agreeing with you that both Bob and Pat, you know, in a way, I'm glad they didn't live to see some of the things that have occurred, you know. The terrible situation that we're facing now in our country that's so divided. And of course, you know, both Bob and Pat, you know, saw this coming, as did all the other elders, ancestors of the tribal peoples. You know, they've seen this time coming, and you know, and so what are we to do here in 2022 as we look forward into the future and consider seven generations.
Well, and let's invoke Bob's wry, gentle, wise humor, even about everything now, without losing any solemnity, grief, or honoring. When yes, his great spirit brother Pat was dying, and Bob was appalled at the level of medical treatment on the reservation. They just put him right into hospice away, and Bob was in outrage. But and the doctors there said, well, you have a few weeks or a month. And Bob said to Pat, as long as I've known you, you've never been on time for anything. Why start now? Right? And he did. He decided. Yeah. The orthodoxy, and you know, lived well beyond that, still hanging in. But yes, you've never been obedient, you know, to time your whole life. Why start now? And he would say that to us, right? We're all skidding in. And the last time I saw Vine Deloria, I was with Bob, and there was an honoring, and I want to bring in Vine Deloria too. Just all these wizards, all these wizards. What a great human. Wonderful. And Vine was being honored at the in the Capitol for his lifetime achievement, and all the great Native American leaders were there. And Bob said, it's only because Vine is here that fist fights are not breaking out, right? And then Vine said this great thing. He said, I meet many, many young activists today who are very, very serious about themselves. And he said, we were serious about the issues, but always playful among ourselves. And Bob really embodied that as well. And I really hold on to that. And it was at that time that Bob had won the Crazy Horse lawsuit, right? And people were coming up to, you know, so it is all one web. So we say hello to Vine Deloria. I did a whole lot of astrological work for Vine. We were great buddies. I really love him. But for him, he's like, you're not being negative enough. Right? I want bad news. I'm like, oh, well, we're working on it. We're working on it, Vine. But so, yeah, so his spirit coming in going, is it bad enough now for you, Vine? And he's like, yes, it's bad enough now. Right. Okay. There we go. And we're spiraling with it. But let's,
as Vine, eloquently wrote, you know, God is red. So, yeah, and what does that really, you know, really allude to? What does that really mean? And in my humble opinion, you know, when we look at all of the world's major and minor religions, and then we take a look at the indigenous perspective, and we understand the connection, you know, Ho Metakwe Ase, all my relations, we're all connected from, you know, all of the smallest micro to the largest macro, you know, from the atomic structure of an atom to the movement of the celestial universe, you know, and the galaxies themselves moving around each other. And so everything is in motion. And I think that that's something that not only Bob and Pat, but obviously Vine knew very well and wrote extensively about. And I think it's something that we really need to remember now at this critical time when there's 8 billion souls on the planet, you know, and we're crashing the biosphere due to the excessive packing of the atmosphere with these gases.
Right. So let's go back to the July 4th of 2003, the July 4th powwow in 2003, they were talking about tribally owned wind turbines then. Is that really the beginning of coup on July 4th, and may it be the right way to honor and celebrate July 4th henceforth?
Well, I think that, you know, I don't recall that's exactly the day that coup was founded, but I do know that we dedicated the Rosebud turbine, I believe it was on March the 4th, 2024. And that was a very significant event. I was there. I recorded it. Bob and Pat wrapped these wonderful different colored, it was like a giant prayer tie almost. I wasn't quite sure what I was seeing. but I've never seen those two guys happier than that day, I'll tell you. You know, when we gathered and we started up the turbine, and, you know, it ran for a minute or two, and then of course it shut down because something was wrong. But, you know, the point is that it was a great, great day. And I think that the fact that Bob and Pat went to the mat for the people, and I really did a lot of, as you know, because you live in D.C., they spent a lot of time inside the Beltway, you know, going up on Capitol Hill, going to the meetings, you know, lobbying the senators and the congressmen to embrace, you know, this obvious solution to the nation's and the world's you know, biggest problem, which of course is catastrophic climate change, and adding, you know, and basing it in a foundation of indigenous wisdom. That's the point. Of why should we, you know, transition from oil, coal, and gas to over to wind and solar and, you know, biofuels and all the things that are good for us and sustain us that don't tear down the fabric of the creation itself. And this is what we're confronted with, of course, every day. You know, when I met Bob and Pat, it was a really funny thing what happened, because there was a conference down in Denver, Colorado. I think it was 2002. And what had happened to me quickly is that I had signed a contract with the Rocky Mountain Institute and Amory Lovins, Paul Hawken, and Hunter Lovins, based on their book Natural Capitalism, to do a three-part documentary series. And we were very excited. We were gung-ho, and we even had a billionaire that had written a promissory letter of intention for $1.5 million of that budget. And so it was unheard of, and we were off and running. And then 9/11 came along, and we lost that deal that day when those planes hit the towers. And so I was sort of groping around going, wow, you know, what are we going to do now? And Amory was going to this conference down in Denver that was being put on by CERT, the Council of Energy Resource Tribes, and run by Beaver and Roger. And so I went down there, and they hired me to interview all of the tribal leaders that were there. And so I was going through the whole thing, trying to get as much as I could. And at the end, but they told me, but don't talk to those two guys over there. Stay away from them. So, of course, at the end of the day, you know, I'm sitting in the bar having a beer, and there's Pat Spears, and I'm, you know, having a beer. I'm like, yeah, I was warned not to talk to you guys. And I said, I wonder why that is. And so we started talking, and I said, well, you know, I got my interview chair still set up back there with the lights and everything and the camera. Why don't we go back there and you can tell me, you know, we'll get this on record. And that's when it began. And I got to tell you, you know, what I brought out of there was this amazing relationship with Bob Goff and Pat Spears, because I was told the story that we're going through right now. But it was 2002, that was 20 years ago. And they were working up there at what we call Upper NREL, the National Renewable Energy Laboratory, but that's the Wind Technology Center that's outside of Boulder, Colorado, up on the hill. and a division in there called Wind Powering America with Larry Flowers, and they had an office over there because Larry was really promoting this indigenous wind, this Saudi Arabia wind that blows through, you know, North Dakota, South Dakota, parts of Nebraska, Wyoming, and Montana, that could give the nation literally half of its electricity supply, no problem, just from the wind energy, and a quarter just from the wind energy just blowing over tribal lands. So we're saying, what's not to get here, you know? And they got Larry to hire me to record the installation of the first utility-scale wind turbine to be owned by a Native American Indian tribe, and that was the Rosebud Sioux turbine. And that began the process of the films that you've been looking at. You know, I made three of them. The first one was called Wind Powering Native America, which is, you know, a bit of a an institutional film, I suppose, in terms of how do you build a wind turbine, but we tried to put in indigenous values as much as we could, and I think we succeeded. And then we had the 1 minute Native Wind Powering America that kind of went around the world, that little 1 minute one that premiered at the Clinton Global Initiative and went on to be featured as a, a film in the Telluride Mountain Film Festival. 1 minute long. I think we have the record for the shortest movie ever, you know, in official recognition. They put us in front of Chris Payne's debut of Who Killed the Electric Car, which was really cool because we had a big packed house of 1,000 people, and Bob and Pat get out there and talked about, you know, problem, solution in 1 minute. Then we waited through an hour and a half of Chris's film, which was problem, 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 little tiny bit of solution at the end, but not really, you know. So we were happy about that, you know. Once again, you know, counting coup, as we said, in the along the coup trail. And so, but then also this work in progress that I pointed your attention to earlier today, which was just titled Native Wind. And that's really about the grid itself and the enormity of what we're dealing with here. Because I'll tell you, Caroline, when it comes down to electricity, not too many people, particularly Americans, understand it at all. But the grid, the U.S. grid system, is the biggest machine in the world, and it comes in three parts: the Eastern grid, the Western grid, and the Texas grid. Go figure. And they don't really talk to each other that well. And it was something that was started way back, you know, 100 years ago when Nikola Tesla gave us alternating current, and then we just built it onto it. You know, it's kind of like the add-on of, you know, so it's just kind of a big, almost a big maze, a rat's nest, I suppose, in some ways, of how the electricity is delivered to our homes that we plug our computers into, and how we burn the coal and the oil and the gas to get it, you know, coupled with nuclear and hydro and a little bit of solar and wind. But that's about the extent of it. And the majority actually is, you know, fossil fuels, which is, as you know, a very, very big problem for us humans or anything else that breathes oxygen.
Yes, it's the conflagration,
At any rate, so, but to the spirit, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No. It's all good. We like conversing, but because Bob very dedicated to the grid. I think we did a whole show with Bob and Pat on the grid, you know, and how when the grid was carrying, you know, hydroelectric power relatively okay, and then and now it's 85% coal. So he was, you know, again repurposing the grid is there. We would just want to repurpose it. It's a true fact, and then a resonant metaphor for everything. And I just want to go back to the July 4th, 2003, for the fun of it, going, you know, wind works, wind swoosh, wind works, you know, may it replace fireworks, right, to cool out the conflagration. And as you said, Energy Independence Day, so crucial, and the desirable vision. And then when Bob would talk about it, you know, the sacredness of wind, and say, you know, when he talks to different, you know, tribal chairmen and said that the conversations were guided because they said, you know, casinos can be canceled with the stroke of a pen, but wind cannot be canceled. And he spoke about the ceremony, both imaginatively and literally, of putting up the wind towers, and like prayer sticks, right? And which are a wonderful mythic grid that we all can do, actually, to weave the yarn around the stick, and the ceremony of reverence, you know, that the wind towers not hurt the birds, that we cooperate with the wind. There's a great part in the film. Maybe you can help me here. Oh yeah, it's Leola One Feather, right? And she's talking about the four winds. And there's the wife and five sons, and the winds are in our hands. Our little finger is the south wind, which is very gentle, and our third finger is the east wind, which needs others, right? And then the north wind is our middle finger, right? And it's strong and rowdy, and it really leads the thing, and the thumb is the whirling wind. And it's like, that's fun. It's great that our middle finger, which is also our Saturn finger, meaning when we give somebody the finger, we're questioning their authority, but we're also summoning the north wind. And so this confluence that you're swooshing, right, of science and mythology. And one of the great things that Bob did also is he talked to NASA, and let's talk about all the people that you and Bob are willing to talk and collaborate with. And so Bob talked to NASA and said, you know, you're studying climate change, but I have, you know, elders in my community who can just tell you, let's put these together. And his Lakota elders told the story of Star Maiden, who goes off with Star Guy to the heavens, and she has a garden, and she there's a giant turnip, and she pulls the turnip out. It's in the cup of the Big Dipper, and she sees the Earth, and she longs for Earth, and the turnip leaves a giant black hole. And the NASA scientist said, well, that's interesting, because we just discovered a giant black hole right where you said. Anyway, so I love the science and mythology coming back together, and, you know, Bob's such a great mediator, and yeah, talk to Clinton. That's right. We got, and people go Clinton, and he goes, I'll work with anybody, right? I mean, that's very much your deal too. I mean, at the conferences you have, you know, James Cameron and Ted Turner and, you know, and Wesley Clark, for God's sake. I mean, just, you know, you too are, you know, let's talk to everybody, right?
Yeah, T. Boone Pickens. I mean, you know, right, left, center. You know, we want to get everybody, and we want to have a conversation, and we want to figure it out. You know, we're not going to get anywhere if we're just going to be continuously divided and fighting with each other, and that was the approach that, you know, that we took at the Intertribal Council coup on utility policy, but also at the American Renewable Energy Day. You know, my production company, by the way, is AmericanSpiritProductions.com. You have to spell it all out. It's kind of hidden away over there on the as all these movies actually that people can go and look at if they want to see what we're talking about, this triptych of Native Wind films at AmericanSpiritProductions.com. But anyway, the point is that when we made the film, we wanted to show it to the Aspen City Council because we said, hey, you know, I mean, I lived in Aspen for 40 years, and I said, hey, Bob, you know, Aspen has a lot of money, you know, I mean, they could be really, you know, powerfully helpful in our efforts, you know, here. And so at the end of June in 2004, we got an audience with the mayor and the council in formal session. We screened this 20-minute film, and they watched it patiently and enjoyed it. And then they were very passionately demanding that they, amongst themselves, you know, needed to buy one of these native wind turbines because Aspen had made a big commitment to going green, you know. And Bob and I were delighted. We're sitting there, you know, answering all the questions, mostly Bob. But afterwards, I was talking to the mayor on the street, and I said, you know, Mayor, I'm involved with Bob and Pat and Native Energy, this company in Vermont that was helping us, a partner back then, doing an Energy Independence Day campaign. You know, we want to start a national movement, and I think that Aspen should have an Aspen Renewable Energy Day. And she said, I do too, and you need to do it, and you need to do it before the end of the summer. And I'm like, what are you talking about? It's only 2 months away. And she said, yeah, and I'll give you some money. And so that was the birth of Our Day. And Our Day is an interesting acronym because, you know, some people say Our Day. Some people say Air Day, A-R-E. I like to say Our Day. But if you look closely in the acronym, A-R-E-D-A-Y, you'll see the hidden meaning, and it's a red day. And I want to honor the roots of this formation.
Well, we're gonna take a very, very short musical break just to gather our wits, and we'll be right back. Our more than perfect guest for today is Chip Cummins, and we are honoring Bob Goff and Pat Spears and Vine DeLore, all the wind wizards, both incarnate and spirit. And we will be right back after this very short break.
She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
All get down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Chanty, chanty, come blow my chanty home. Telegraph my indigo sky ship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Our guest today is Chip Cummins. I hope I'm pronouncing your name right. He is head of Our Day, and we are honoring our great ancestor ally, Bob Goff, who died September 17th, 2017, at a day that we should honor grief by our dedication to life and to, well, his work and so much of our work. And so, I sort of cut you off in the middle of explaining, you know, Our Day, and however you want to put it before our radio council here is, what would you like us to breathe into it? What is Our Day's current dedication, and what would you like us to breathe wind into that dedication?
The breath. Yes, Allah. The breath, okay.
Oh,
what, you know, the first breather. I think, you know, I wanted to tell the radio world through KPFA and whoever's listening to the show out there that the dedication of today's program to the memory of Bob and Pat and their great work, and that Bob was a founding board member of Our Day, and that became 7 years later formed into the American Renewable Energy Institute. And he was a founding board member of that, along with Sylvia Earle, the great oceanographer, and Wesley Clark, the great general, and many other luminaries on our very large board of trustees. We have about 30 of them. And that we accomplished 16 consecutive Our Day summits from 2004 until 2019, until COVID knocked us out like every other convening organization. But we hit a pinnacle when Ted Turner first showed up in 2008. He came back four more times, but he brought Jimmy Carter, the former president, with him in 2014. And so we were so delighted to be able to have a former president of the United States, and really one of the truly great presidents that we've had, in the modern history. And that set us down the road to attract other former world leaders, like Kevin Rudd from Australia came in 15, and President Olafur Grimsson, the president of Iceland, he was our third one in 16. And so, you know, we had this amazing track record of having a very high level convening that would include not only folks like that, but then you had James Cameron, when Avatar was in the movie theater in 2010, and many senators and governors and congressmen and different people from different cross sectors of our society that would come, because renewable energy, everybody knew that was the common denominator. And they all came to talk about that. But we always would bless each and every morning with a Native American traditional prayer. Orville Looking Horse came many years and performed that beautiful function and service. But then others also. And to just kind of create the context of the work that is at hand. And so I'm so delighted to have been able to work with Bob, you know, all those years, and have this be part of our you know, expression or deliverable, if you, as it were, you know, if you're working for a government contractor. We're trying to deliver. And I'll just finish by saying that the mission of AREI, American Renewable Energy Institute, is the rapid implementation of renewable energy and energy-efficient technologies at the speed and scale necessary to solve catastrophic climate change. That's it.
Right. Well, and let's do a shout out to our ally, your current president, Gordon Fuller, right?
Sure, Gordon Fuller, who
yes.
we invited to join us in 2021 when Sally Rani stepped down as the president. She was my partner who helped create all 16 of those aforementioned, and now Gordon and I are partnered up to take it forward into the future. And Gordon is a beautiful man who is from the Hopi tradition people, his grandmother, but also the grandnephew of Buckminster Fuller, the great visionary, futurist, who gave us the geodesic dome and so forth. And so we're hoping that the next phase after we come out of this forced, pandemic hiatus is to go into this new world of the third decade of the 21st century, where it's now things like the blockchain and the metaverse and NFTs and, you know, DAO, distributed autonomous organizations, and all of these things that we pretty much
yes.
know nothing about what's seen, and yet, you know, it's this ethereal, you know, ones and zeros world that we live in on our iPhones, computers.
That's why I need you and Gordon. Because what is it that distributed? What is the acronym there? The D what?
DAO, distributed autonomous organizations.
Right. Okay. That's right. And the blockchain. That's right. And this is Gordon's big vision realm. And it's like, we need him and you and everybody to translate, but to animate the vision. And then we're gathering the winds of change going, who brought what to this thing? So yeah, we need everybody. Absolutely. The team. So yeah, blockchain, whatever, people will explain it to me. Gordon will explain it, but that's right. But we probably can't do it now. I don't, do you completely understand all those things that you just mentioned, the metaverse and blockchain?
I completely understand. That's like saying, do I completely understand my life? You know, I'm trying really hard, you know.
right.
But I will say that, it's something that... It's up to about $2 trillion market cap around the world.
What is? My mind spins into abstraction what's spun into $2 trillion? Oh, thank you.
The blockchain, or let's just say cryptocurrency. There's two different things. The blockchain is a platform. Cryptocurrency refers to Bitcoin and, you know, Ethereum and things that you can actually buy that have this monetary value, right? And so... And that's up to $2 trillion, and each, you know, major banking institution has a division now that deals with it. So it's not going away, is my point. And so we all better understand it, because it's here to stay. And it's something that replaces fiat currency, which is, you know, the dollar bill in your wallet, backed up ostensibly by, you know, supposedly by gold, but actually by oil. I don't know if everybody realizes that when Nixon took us off the gold standard and put us on, you know, we became the petrodollar at that point. And the world's been running based on that ever since, which that's a longer, deeper conversation than we got time for here. But to say that this is also why Bob and Pat and I were so adamantly pushing for a renewable energy future back at the start of this millennium, at the start of this century. Okay. I mean, that's really where it was at. You know, George Bush came in, 9/11 happened. We attacked, you know, the Middle East, and simultaneously, we gave birth to the renewable energy movement in earnest. You know, it had been kind of flailing along since Jimmy Carter, you know, put up those solar panels back in the late 70s, and of course, Ronald Reagan tore them off right away. But
Yeah, Jimmy Carter, certainly our greatest former president, indefatigable, and we embrace him as a kind and humble, effective wizard, you know. And then you know, just, I guess, it, well, it, so many things here. But yeah, we both noticed when George W. Bush inadvertently spoke the truth recently. He was like, and a terrible, unjust war that Putin, you know, that Putin, imagine a human launching an unjust war on unprovoked, you know, and that terrible thing that we did to Iraq. Oops, I mean, Ukraine. And then he sort of said, well, it's sort of both, isn't it? I mean, he did. He sort of mumbled the truth.
Well, like I told you the other day, I think he has a hard time sleeping, you know, given the what he said, you know, that slipped out of his subconscious, you know, because he knows that he unleashed the demons when he did that. You know, when shock and awe happened, the most heinous moment in American history that most Americans don't even remember, you know, that was March, I think, March of maybe 20, I can't remember.
No, it was the vernal equinox. It was March 21st. It was the day dedicated to lambs and new life and Persian New Year. The Dementors are so, they hoover the sacred days and fill them with ugliness and violence.
March 1st, so that was the day that we shot 100,000 cruise missiles from offshore into a sleeping Baghdad and killed that many people, I think, and began to, you know, and who does that? I mean, we didn't even send troops in. We just sat there in our shit warships and fired these missiles. And then, you know, the rest of it, you know, unfolded and set up, in fact, I believe what's happening, what we're dealing with right now, you know, because, you know, we could have had a century that was dedicated to renewable party power, renewable energy, had Al Gore taken office. But instead we got, you know, Dick Cheney's, you know, what was it, what he called it, the war against terror, the war that will never end. And he was right.
Right. And all those characters, all the money, the Koch brothers, the thing, it's all the Supreme Court, it's all the Cheneys, all right, Liz is playing a good role from the creepitudinous, you know, family doing much harm. But, you know, who brought what? We go, that part's okay. But you also wanted to, you know, to direct our gaze to Australia and the strategy emerging out of Australia, because they just elected somebody good.
Right. Well, thank you for reminding me that we really need to pay attention to what's happening here. And you know, and as much as Vine Deloria wants to hear the, you know, the bad news, let me give you some good news. And the good news is that in Australia last month, the women got together in the center of the country. That's both, you know, politically, but metaphorically and physically. And they created, with the youth, they got together with the youth, they created a new platform called the Teal Movement, the color teal. And that platform was based on a fiscal conservative approach to radical climate solution. Think about that. You know, fiscally conservative, the Republicans, I mean, that might as well be called the Republican Party in the United States, and a radical climate implementation solution. So that won the day, and they were able to rid themselves of their prime minister called Scott Morrison, who, I mean, it wasn't a lump of coal that he didn't want to, you know, sell to somebody out of that country. And he was a marketing guy. He was just, you know, not good for the biosphere or in many other things. And so they got rid of him. They ousted them, and they did it by women coming together with the young voters in this way. And I think that we need something very similar here in the United States now, as we're facing these midterm elections in the face of these, you know, January 6th insurrection hearings and, you know, this terribly divided country where people think that they can just believe whatever they want to believe, whether it's science-based or factual-based or whatever, and that it's time now really in earnest for, you know, the United States to bridge the divide and come together, you know, just like we did at our day. I mean, five times we had Ted Turner and T. Boone Pickens on the same stage. And while Ted might have been to the left of, you know, John Lennon and T. Boone to the right of Attila the Hun, they would come together in the middle, you know, red met blue on the green, on the Arde stage, and they would drop their extreme positions and they would find out the commonality. What's the same? What binds us? You know, like as in, you know, the green, like, you know, energy, and the environment, or economics, you know, the three E's. You know, but we have to meet there and figure out how to solve our problems. Like in the old days when Ted Kennedy would go over to Orrin Hatch's backyard in D.C. and they'd have a, you know, barbecue some dogs and some burgers and just hang out. Because they were friends. Cause they were
not actual dogs. Hot dogs. Right. Anyway, just wanted to clarify that.
Well,
right.
Sorry.
But the Australian strategy, the women and the young voters, and we go, okay, and everybody. And people do keep saying, you know, the country's so divided. It's like, I don't want to keep saying that. There's a small crackpot fringe that is very loud, you know, and delusional. And then there's sane, reverent people eager for a unifying story. I'm kind of going for that. And I did like the article that just popped up on its own, because, you know, everything can be magic, on my screen going, and it's how to make 1,000 witches with one Supreme Court decision. And it's a pretty good article. I will post it, as I posted all of your films on Facebook, Caroline Casey, or CoyoteNetworkNews.com, and also Twitter, Stand Up Coyote, all those things. So how to make 1,000 witches with one Supreme Court decision. It's a good article, and it reminds me... when Berta Cáceres, wonderful Goldman Prize winner, Honduran protector of the environment, was assassinated, her colleagues took the stage at the next Goldman Awards and they chanted, "Berta did not die; she multiplied." Right? And you know, and Bob and Pat, you know, they did not die. They did not die; they multiplied. Right? And they, you know, we want them to the unifying of blockchain and Gordon Fuller's vision and your dedication and all the again, it's a time now to animate the unifying story. You know, everybody who brought what, we've got that, and repurposing the grids, because it is, you know. It is so. Are you doing, you know, outreach now to go, look how beautiful this could be, and it's biomimicry, and anything not based on biomimicry is collapsing. You know what Pluto opposes, Neptune trines. I say to the mythological.
I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Since you asked, you know, what we are doing now,
yeah,
in the spirit of Bob and Pat, and that is that I have found myself in Sedona, Arizona, the past 5 months, and so we launched the Sedona Institute as a subsidiary of, you know, AREI, and we had our first event, and it was an extraordinary event because we called it Planetary Change, the Maya Calendar, and the Four Earth Mandates. And we brought in my very dear friends and colleagues, Mandahi Basita and his dear wife, Geraldine, and they were joined by J.J. Hertak and his dear wife, and they all, Desiree, and they all presented, and so Mandahi is a staff holder of the Council of the Eagle and the Condor, which is an organization that was established in 2013 with the Kogi Mamos and many other indigenous spiritual leaders down south, and they prayed for 4 days, and they came away with the Four Earth Mandates delivered from the earth directly to the shaman themselves. And I'll just quickly say what the earth mandates are, because
yeah,
the first one is the recognition of the spiritual authority of the indigenous people, number one. Now, that might not fly very big over there at the Vatican, but nonetheless, that we must recognize indigenous spiritual authority, number one. All around the world, not just one tribe, all tribes.
Oh, and number two. But as you said, But Pope Francis, pretty, what is it? Rescuing Extinction, or what was the movie that you were part of that also Pope Francis had projected onto the walls of the Vatican?
Yeah, Racing Extinction. Yeah.
Thank you. Right, and he's called upon, you know, the stewardship and leadership of Native peoples. But anyway, back to you. Just going, we're including the Pope.
You know, he's the most, you know, advanced pope we've ever seen. But the second earth mandate is that we must make spiritual payments to sacred sites around the planet, like Mount Fuji and Mount Kilimanjaro and Mount Blanca and other places. Mm. There's many, but there's significant ones. And the third earth mandate is very interesting, and that's where we must build 13 houses of original thought that are all centered around the fire so that the elders can transmit the information to the youngers. But it really is intrinsic to understand the fire. And I'm not sure how many of your listeners really understand the Kogi, but I would put everybody's attention to a very important movie called Aluna, the ecological crisis of Mother Earth, but Aluna, A-L-U-N-A. Just Google it, and you can see this fantastic film that shows these people that refer to humanity as, you know, younger brother. These are the ones that went way back up into the mountains of outside of Santa Marta in Colombia, these 25,000-foot mountains, and secluded themselves, you know, after the conquistadors came. But they also have an intrinsic understanding of reality and how the world is actually put together, the actual spiritual construct of the planet. Because after all, I think you would agree, Carolyn, that we're spirits having a physical experience and that we're mortals. And this doesn't last forever. And so, you know, what is the construct of Mother Earth? In fact, you know, I posit that, you know, when we talk about coal, oil, and gas, we have to talk about 500 million years of dinosaurs and phytoplankton and trees and animals, but also our grandparents. It is us. Om Mani Padme Om. I am that I am, or I am that. And so when we extract the oil, coal, and the gas and we refine it and burn it into the atmosphere, crashing the biosphere, we're taking the essence of all the life that's lived that's now beautifully sequestered into the crust of the earth, including what we will become and our grandparents. And we're stealing the future of our children. And that has to stop. And that's the memory that I want to really, you know, deeply integrate with the memorial for Bob and Pat. But I also want to say...
Well, go over the third mandate again. It's 13 houses around a fire. Wait a minute. What? Mandate three.
The third mandate is that we have to build 13 houses. The number 13 is very important. I'll explain why in a second.
13 Supreme Court justices would be good. All right, back to you.
Yeah, that would be good. Very good. Better than 15. 13 houses of original thought, and we need to put them on set. 7 different continents. So that's just the beginning. There should be 1,300, okay, 13,000, but we have to start. And there's already 3 of those already that's been built, okay? And the Council of the Eagle and the Condor that came up with these mandates, you know, is centered by a Kogi Momo, but then Mendahi is one of the staff holders, but Chief Ninawa from the Huni Kui is another one, and he's from his tribe of 15,000 in the Brazilian Amazonia. And then there's others from different countries down there, okay? It's not just one tribe. It's a very intertribal, just like we've been talking all day here on this program, the importance of the intertribal collaboration. So these 13 houses, I would like to build one here in Sedona. I think it would be very, very strong to do that. They are designed from the Kogi, and the Kogi, the Mamos, what they do is they don't emerge from the cave until they're 13 years old. So they spend their first 13 years inside the cave. They never see the light of day. And when they come out, it's told that one eye can see the stars during the daytime, in fact. I'm just telling you what I've heard, but that I want to also mention that the fourth Earth mandate, there are 4.
But wait, before you go, though, 13 houses and fire. Where's the fire in this vision?
The fire is important because that's what binds us all, is the fire. In other words, what do we remember when we're little babies growing up? We remember the first fire in our parents' hearts, or perhaps it's the first campfire. But the fire is what captures the spiritual imagination and allows us to go in and begin to understand the reality of our existence on planet Earth, which is spinning around the sun. And as the moon spins around the Earth, you know, once every 30 days, and as the Earth spins around the sun once every 365 days, the sun too goes around its center point once every 250 million years. And we are now exactly at that place in the Milky Way galaxy where we were 250 million years ago when we had the big one, which was known as the Great Dying in the 5 Great Extinction events in the past. So there's a lot of things that are happening now that all of the prophecies speak to, you know, indigenous and otherwise, but particularly indigenous. And I want to get
I just want us to clarify the vision. There's 13 houses, and the sacred fire is wherever we dedicate it, or the sacred fire is in the middle of the 13. What's the vision you want us to animate?
The fire is in the house, and the fire is where we communicate the truth, where the elders, where the medicine men, the shaman, the spiritual leaders can tell the story of their particular creation, etc., to the youngers, you know, to those that need to know that information. It's a critical element of the process.
Yes, we're crazy about council fires lit everywhere. Dedication, oh fire, if we treat you better, can we have fewer conflagrations? And then let's just take it back in our last minutes to wind, right? And I love, you know, Jerome Ringo in your film, in one of the Native Wind films. Wind carrying acid rain could be carrying, you know, energy. Liberate the wind as well. Right, and then Pat says at Araday.net, where you can see all these films, seek spiritual advice from the wind, says Pat Spears. Power in wind and power in asking those forces to help us, you know, live in a good way, or we have the tornadoes. But he said, you know, cowboys, Indians, farmers, cities, you know, all allies. That's what Pat is wafting out to us. Yeah, and you've done many grown-up wonderful things, the Conference of Mayors and getting a lot of carbon off the transmission. So it's lucky we don't know how long things take, because your dedication has been long. And again, as we're spiraling out, I give you the last, you know, what is the last minute here, just the vision of the wind, you know, as Bob and Pat are handing it to you, you know, And we will also host Gordon in the fullness of time to, you know, soon to do Big Vision, and we'll keep this going. But here you go. What's the blessing that you would like us all to animate, to spiral out with? Oh yeah.
Yes. And I'd like everybody to just close their eyes and really meditate on reciprocity, and that Mother Nature gives, and then she gives a little bit more. And in that way, we're in the holy Tao, or the way, and that the wind also is part of that giving. And it's the winds of change that are blowing through our country right now, and the winds of time, as we remember the ancestors, that are our source. So it's in this reciprocity, which is actually the fourth earth mandate, that we must all work together in collaboration to achieve the great vision.
thank god you brought in the fourth mandate in the nick of time as we're spiraling out. Thank you. That's perfect. That's great. Our guest, Chip Cummins, Araday.net, excuse me. Thanks always to Kirsten Thomas, wonderful board up. I'm Caroline Casey. We will reconvene next week, coyotenetworknews.com, for more fun to be had. Thanks again, Chip. There you go. Woof woof.
So much.